Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Talk Theater in Chicago is Chicago's longest-running theater podcast, with over 2.5 years of interviews in our archive. And now, here comes another top-notch in-depth interview. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago. And let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. My guest today is James Powell, who is the director of the most anticipated show of the year, Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage. Hello, James.
Hi.
Can you tell us what we are to expect? Because everybody has this, everybody's seen the movie.
Yeah.
So now tell us what the stage play is going to be about.
Well, you know, we have to honor that story. And, you know, how we tell it and how we move from one scene to another, of course, has to be done in a theatrical style. So I would imagine that any audience that knows that story will not be let down when they visit the theater here in Chicago to see it, because we absolutely have honored that.
So it's true to the film.
Oh, very much so, in its story, in how we tell it. You know, there are scenes that are sort of slightly abstract and not so literal, and other scenes that are clearly set in the same setting. So, you know, we have to play with it to get the best results for it theatrically.
All right. For the 5 or 6 people in the world who haven't seen the movie, can you give us a little synopsis of the plot line?
Baby Houseman, Frances Houseman, is invited on a holiday. Her family are invited by Max Kellerman, who is the owner of Kellerman's Holiday Resort, which is a very kind of upmarket resort in the Catskill Mountains. And she falls in love with a dance teacher.
And what era?
1963.
63, okay.
Yes. And by stepping in for a dance routine because his best friend, Penny, is unable to do this, then she steps up to the plate, and through learning the dance routine and for various other reasons and mitigating circumstances, they fall in love with each other. It's a kind of painful holiday romance and the coming of age story of Francis, known as Baby Houseman. And then he leaves at the end and decides then to come back. So we have a great, happy, heart-lifting ending to the story.
And this Patrick Swayze was in the film, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Who played the baby in the film?
Jennifer Grey.
Jennifer Grey. Okay, it was a star-making role for the two of them, if I remember.
Oh, yeah, I think it absolutely was. And you know, I mean, that film has become such a popular film that it's terrifying for any director of theater to take on such a title. So, it's been a real tough ask, you know, and without a fantastic team around me, and also without the assistance of Eleanor Bergstein, the writer and creator of it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. She's on board very much on this.
Oh, completely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and
that's got to help, right? Doesn't it?
Of course, yeah. Absolutely. You know, every question is answered. It's there at source, so that helps us no end. And every kind of issue of subtext or any of that is we have the horse's mouth. So, you know, we can really build on that. So that's been a fantastic help to us.
And from what I've read about this production is this is the pre-Broadway production, correct?
That's correct.
And it is different than the others?
It is, yeah. And in fact, they're all different. I mean, I've been on board with this show. There were two other productions before I joined. The original production was in Sydney and toured Australia. And then there was a production in Hamburg in Germany. And then the producers wanted to bring it to the West End of London. And they asked me if I would direct that production, which I did do. And then I've directed since then 3 other productions, Chicago being the third, and each one of them is different. And in particular, in this territory, you know, we had certain scenes dedicated to enabling a foreign audience to understand what America was about in 1963. It was on the precipice of huge change, you know.
Yeah, civil sure. rights. It was one of the key years in our history.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so Americans completely understand that, or Americans of a certain age certainly do. Whereas, you know, you take this show to countries in Western Europe, that then sometimes you have to lean into the narrative a bit and get them to understand what was exactly was going on in this territory at that time. So here we don't need to do that. So there have been certain things we've been able to edit and reshape and cut and move around without feeling you're teaching your grandmother to suck eggs. So.
Well, it's, I'm sure with the name Dirty Dancing, I'm sure this is a fantastic dance show.
It's amazing, and I can't tell you, I still today, I mean, I danced a little in my time. I was an actor and I was in musicals and all of that, you know, but I'm staggered at their ability. And it's, they're a vibrant, sexy young company, and Kate Champion's work is exemplary, as is Craig Wilson's, our ballroom choreographer. It's some amazing dance routines which take your breath away.
Yeah, in reading some of the things, you even have people for ballet people in the ensemble.
Oh, I mean, Britta Lazanger, our Penny, is a prima ballerina, was a prima ballerina with the Joffrey Ballet.
And, wow.
And now she's playing Penny. And you know what's really interesting is to see those people who are, the discipline that goes into becoming a ballet dancer is just extraordinary. But when they are released into this world of dancing, this kind of loose-hipped, back-bending, all the things probably their ballet teachers would have said, do not do that. They really let their hair down and get into it and just have a fantastic time with it. So it's really encouraging to see them enjoying themselves so much.
And some of the songs, are we going to hear some of the classic songs, Time of Your Life and Hungry Eyes? And
yeah, all there.
Yeah.
All there. You know, it's. I'm asked this question a lot. You know, what it's so difficult because, of course, you know, it's such a well-known film. But what I will say is, in my time on this show, Dirty Dancing has owned its own theatrical space, and even more so this time round. And, you know, as a piece of theatre, and dare I say, innovative theatre, the technical aspects of this show are like no other show. We have video technology, we have a set that has two revolves, the floor splits in half, we have different levels of that, we have lots of flown pieces, we have projections, we have a log, a lake, a field. I mean, it's an amazingly complex technical
show. So it's a spectacle, too, besides the dance.
Completely.
Wow.
Completely.
Well, people like that today, and I like it, too.
Oh, the production values are extraordinary. They really are. And when I go and think of an audience coming in just to see that alone, I think already they're getting value for money. So what do? In the heart of that, you have a fantastic, touching story with wit and pain and humor and drama. You know, it's many layered, and some of the best songs and tunes that we know to date. You know, we have a live band, and we balance it against there are certain scenes that are set, if you like, where music is playing. So we have, it works best for us that, you know, if in his cabin he puts a record on, we hear pre-recorded music to that, and other scenes where the band are there lit on stage and they're part of the action, and you're seeing live musicians play there with people dancing and singing to it. So
there's original songs too?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So not just the classics we're used to hearing.
That's right.
But you do cover those.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that people would get aggravated if you didn't.
Yeah, well, this is the complexity of the position we're in. You know, do we live up to the expectation of our paying audience, or do we do something based on something? And for us, we want to honor that great story, and we want to put it into a theatrical context and make it work in that context. And, you know, I don't want to let the audience's anticipation become an anticlimax. I want them to get the full benefit and the full value of money that they get. And to date, that's what we're achieving with the show.
Well, that's remarkable because, as you know, many times when you go from film to stage, people do get disappointed because the creators don't realize how important that is.
It's the same as you read a great novel and then you go and see the movie and you go, oh, you know, in my head, when I read the book, it was so much better, you know.
Yeah.
And it is important. And to a degree, you can look at some. I mean, you know, there are automobiles in the movie, you know. Do we want to be that literal and bring a car on stage? And or do we want to just suggest a car? And so we sit around, I sit around with my team and we debate this and discuss it and see how we can best achieve it. And we've come up with a result that to date the audience go, oh, right, great. And they accept it and with open and warm hearts. So, you know, that goes for many other aspects of the show. That's just one example.
So. Yeah, so you use people's power of imagination, because really that's what theater, live theater is about.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And we've got to do that, you know. But the important thing is, for me, is hitting those marks, hitting the storytelling marks that has made this story such a successful one. And that's what we can't meddle with.
So you're true to the book, because again, yeah, that's a lot of the problems of 21st century musicals.
Yeah,
the book is weak.
Yeah, well, exactly. I've heard that said so many times. You know, and you know, this isn't by any means a traditional piece of musical theatre. This is where I think it's innovative. It's not, you know, you don't get two characters singing to each other. That's not Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage. What you do get are scenes. It's a play with music.
Okay. You know, yeah, that's for those people who get hung up on that. That's good. You're defining that. So yeah, it's a play with music, because you don't use the term musical. You use the classic story on stage.
Exactly. Exactly. Because what do people expect when they see Dirty Dancing, the musical? I think they'd see that, oh, look, they've adapted the book. So now, instead of it being a scene of dialogue, it's two people singing to each other. And I don't want people to be confused by that.
Okay.
So, you know, there, not to be mistaken, there's lots and lots of live singing throughout the show. But we use it in a dramatic sense to enforce the scene and uphold the scene. It sort of underpins the scene while the drama happens throughout it. So it's not quite what you would expect from those of you who are used to musical theater. It's not quite that.
So you're kind of breaking new ground here. Huh?
Well, we hope to be. Yeah.
Yes. Wow, that is amazing. So tell us now how long you've been involved in the project.
Well, I have a daughter, Elsie. She's just over 2 years old, and she was 9 days old when I started rehearsing on this show in London. Obviously, prior to that, I did some pre-production stuff and looked at the film countless times and read the script a lot and, you know, lots of meetings prior to that. So I think we opened in London, about 2 years ago this month. And since then, I've directed the show in Dutch, in Holland, in Utrecht, and then in Toronto. A fabulous production, still playing in Toronto. And now here. So all in all, just over two and a half years.
Wow.
Yes.
And
not one of those shows is the same.
How do you keep track of them all?
Well, you get show reports emailed to you every night. You know what's going on, yeah, you know. And when you get time, you go and visit these things.
So. Well, as we speak now, you're already in previews. And tell us some of the reaction you're getting from people from the previews.
I have to say, this is a beautiful theater, the Cadillac Palace here in Chicago.
Yeah, it is. Just, it is first class.
It's absolutely world class. It's a beautiful theater. And what I've noticed is with the preview audience, you know, there are initial audiences, and they listen here. They listen here more than they do in other territories. You know, in London, they rip the seats up. You know, they go crazy. You get coach loads of party bookers and hen nights, and they come in and they want to have a drink and party.
Yeah, I thought I was crazy. The last time I was in London, there was a reaction like that. Yeah, I thought I was in the wrong place.
Yes.
Yeah. So, well, here we like theater. We take it serious.
Oh, yeah, but they listen. And you know what I love? I love there are some great kind of one-liners in the show. And, you know, when Lisa says to Baby, her sister, you know, you don't care about me. You wouldn't care if I humped the entire army as long as they were on the right side of the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Now, it resonates so much in this territory that it lifts my heart. But I've noticed this audience in particular have been, and it's a huge space to fill. So the power of over 2,000 people just listening has been quite something, and then instantly on their feet at that last chord of music is played and the company do their first dry bow, the entire audience is up, and it's so spontaneous. And not only is it spontaneous, it's not at all manipulated. you know, you go and see shows where you find an audience have been, you know, manipulated into a standing ovation.
As a reviewer, I know when I go to a show and it's packed with friends of the cast and so forth.
You know,
I mean, it could be the worst show in the world, and they're getting up and raving. I'm going, what show do they watch? Yeah.
Well, this you will see, it's a completely spontaneous reaction, and I would love it to be that, because, you know, there are certain tricks you can pull in order to kind of, you know, seduce your audience into that.
Sure.
And this is absolutely honest-hearted. So that I'm thrilled with. But there's been some great reactions, really great. And, you know, I sort of love, you know, walking out the theater at the end. I've made my notes. I have to go in and book a schedule for the cast and crew the next day. And I'll walk through the front of house as the audience are leaving, and to hear them talking about it and has been a very, very positive feedback. So I'm really thrilled with that.
Well, that's what my spies, some of my very good theater friends who have seen the show already.
Yeah.
They didn't want to spoil it for me because they know I don't like I never read it too much about it. I just read enough to do this interview because I like to go into the shows, you know, as a reviewer. It's like someone who bought a ticket.
Yeah.
And just, you know, not have, I've seen the movie, but it's been years.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it'll come back to me because
yes.
I have a memory for that. But you'll find that Chicago is a very fair place. That's why a lot of shows start out here or make a stop here before they go to Broadway.
Yeah. I mean, and that, it seems to me, is forever growing in its status at the minute. I say status. I would normally say status, but, you know, I'm here. So. But there's a lot of energy behind the Broadway Chicago people, you know, and I can see
they're
how,
terrific. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
You know, they're pros. They know what they're doing.
Completely. Completely. You know, and, you know, I have to say it's been how the things have been handled, you know, and how we've been treated here has been first class, and you know, and in a sense they understand they have a first class show, they want to honor and uphold that, and they're very proud of their city, and this is part of that culture. So, you know, it's been terrific.
Well, I think you're going to get a good shake from the reviewers here, because we have a good cross section of reviewers, and I think most of reviewers in town are pretty fair.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah. And, they're not afraid to tell you if they don't like it.
That's their job.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine by me. But, you know, with my hand on my heart, what I absolutely do this for is to provide people with value for money. They pay their ticket, and what do they anticipate? They anticipate a great night out, and that is what Dirty Dancing will give this audience. And that's all I need, you know.
Well, just the subject matter alone kind of makes you bulletproof in certain sense.
Yeah, well, let's hope so.
Yeah, because a lot of people just can't wait for this show.
Yeah.
I think you're going to tap into, from what I've been hearing from people, some of the wicked audience, those, you know, the young girls that go over and over again to see a show, because they did that with the film Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, oh, they do. Yeah. They do, and they're doing it in other productions all over the world of this show. You know, it's you have a central character who's a teenager. She's a virgin. She it's a coming-of-age story for her. And so many women identify with that. But also you have a sexy, cool guy who she falls in love with. And so many men completely identify with that, you know. And in a sense, for both sexes, there's so much to you mirror and you recognize within yourself.
But it's a tasteful show, so people can bring their 11, 12-year-olds.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Was that because I always have to ask that, because some shows aren't, for some reason they think they have to,
I know, they have
to cross a line,
and I don't
understand.
There's a lot of suggestion that those of us with experience will understand, and younger people will, it'll go over their heads, because nothing is explicit.
Oh, that's good. So tell us about your principles now.
You mean my leading characters?
Yeah,
I thought you were thinking of my own personal principles. I don't have any of those. But it's a fantastic and eclectic bunch of people.
Okay.
I mean, they're first-rate performers. Johnny Cassis, played by Joseph Brown, who was our original Johnny. He played it in Australia, and he then came and played it in London's West End, and now he's here playing it. He is a terrific stage presence. He looks like a Roman god. That body is just so perfect. And he's a terrific, terrific dancer and a great actor. He has been serving the show now for the best part of 3 years, and it never lets up. And it's remarkable how he sustains such a level of performance.
That's tough when you've been doing a show that long.
Yeah. And it's an incredibly physical show. But, you know, this guy has a background of the strictest ballet dancing, and yet, you know, he tears the stage up when he moves. He's fantastic. We have Amanda Lee Cobb as Baby. She is a terrific actress. And of course, you know, Baby has to, part of her story is that she learns to dance to a good standard. The difficulty is when you cast a baby who is a dancer, they don't look as though they need to learn to dance.
Yeah.
And she treads that line so perfectly. And her story is so emotional and painful, and you know, her kind of dramatic graph is sort of so eclectic. And she pins and nails every single aspect of the story. She is a wonderful actress. And we auditioned in New York long and hard, and you know, we had a long, long time trying to find and put together the best cast, you know. And we have Caitlin Hopkins, who plays the mum, very seasoned, a professional actress who's done many, many other shows. We have John Bolger playing the father, lots and lots of credits, you know, lots of classical work, lots of TV work, major stuff on television and film, you know, and the list goes on. It's an absolutely first-rate cast, you know. And then within all of that, we have an ensemble who are breathtaking. They are such strong dancers and actresses, and they have to do, and actors, they have to do all kinds of things asked of them.
And who's your choreographer?
Kate Champion.
Okay.
Kate's Australian, has been with the production since it started, and she's done some wonderfully innovative theatre. She was with Deviate and now has her own company, and she's a terrific eye for what's required out of this sort of choreography and how to best serve the story. It's all linked to the story.
I'm sure that some of the dancing is similar to what was in the film, but my guess is you go kind of beyond, way beyond that.
Yeah, we have to make that work on stage, you know. And you know, with the difference is that, with, you know, you can do a close-up of a thigh or a shoulder in film to get the sense of suggestion and eroticism. Mm-hmm. And on stage, you know, you have a whole picture to fill. So, which she does sublimely. And alongside her is Craig Wilson, who is our ballroom choreographer. And, you know, it's often, if the ballroom doesn't work, the dirty dancing won't work.
Yeah,
because you have to balance one against the other. Mm-hmm. So you see the grace and elegance and the discipline of ballroom. And then the very next scene, you see them backbending and grinding and making shapes you didn't think people could make, you know. But if that's not backed against the discipline of ballroom, it doesn't have the same effect. So those two complement each other extremely well.
Wow. Sounds like you're very proud of this show.
I am. Yeah. Very proud.
So give us a little bit of your background. Besides Dirty Dancing, I'm sure you've done a few other things.
Well, I was, yeah. Yes. I was an actor, and I did a few plays and things in London's West End, and then I went into music. I could sing. I'm Welsh, so, you know, we've always liked to sing song from South Wales. And I went into musical theatre, and I was in Cameron Mackintosh's Les Miserables, and I then became a resident director for Cameron and did lots of his shows. And then I became an associate director, so I was directing concert versions of Les Mis and full-scale productions in other territories.
How is Cameron to work with? I understand he's demanding but fair.
Oh, this is a man who has the most acute instinct about theatre and his audience. And, yeah, you know, when somebody is that in touch with what he expects his audience to get, then yes, of course he can be demanding, but the results, I've never been let down by any production of his I've seen.
I agree with you. I mean, the guy's got the Midas touch, no doubt.
But, you know, he wants it perfect, and you know, I have the utmost admiration for that man. And I've worked a lot for him, to the point where most recently I was I've just directed the UK tour of Mary Poppins, which I was the associate director of when it originated in London. Then it, of course,
I can't
came to Broadway,
wait. Yeah, I can't wait. It's coming here. We anticipate that will probably run almost as long as Wicked. That's what they're guessing.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
okay. Well, it's,
the buzz is very strong on that.
That's a terrific show, and I for me, it's sort of each, both Dirty Dancing and Mary Poppins act as an antidote for each other, you know. So it keeps me well balanced. So I continue to do that, and you know, theatre's a place that I have always aspired to, and I've worked my first job was as a flyman in South Wales in a sort of touring house, and I've worked almost in every department of theatre, and here I am now directing huge commercial shows all over the world, and never thought I would be, but you know, it's a terrific experience, and I'm loving certainly this territory with this cast, and bringing a show for me that is says so much about America and is set in a time that was so life-changing to so many Americans.
Yeah, that's one of the key, you know, years. Now, in my lifetime, it was probably the most important year.
Well, you know, you bring a show of that that so belongs in this territory, and it's so evident to see from our initial audiences that we're getting now that, you know, it's home. And it, that feels very warming and very securing.
How much control do you as a director, since your name is on this and as it goes to New York... Yep. You know, it's either going to be your success or your bomb, because your name is on as director. Yeah. How much control do you have, like casting and so forth?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. Well, I resisted being a director because I thought, you know, oh, the buck stops with you, you know. And it has always been my experience that that is not the case at all. That's what I do. But I am part of an enormous team on this production who are all responsible for each of their departments, but only by holding hands can we ever get the results we need to get. And so, you know, people might see it as sort of some kind of autocracy that the position of a director is, but it's never the case. A director is somebody who can act as a conduit in order so each department can communicate cleanly and clearly with each other. And really, that's how I see the role of being a director. I don't see it as somebody who is dictatorial and demanding.
Particularly in a musical, right, where you have so many components.
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, even if you talk about, you know, acting, dancing, and singing, unless the musical supervisor, the choreographer, and the director are in harmony and communicating clearly, you will not get your best results. What you will see is, all right, this is a scene where the acting stops, the singing begins, then the singing stops, and the dancing starts. And, you know, you've got to move through those sequences fluently.
All right, now, one of my last questions is, at what point is the show finished? I know there's a theory that says it's never finished.
But I don't think it is. I don't think creative people... And not to sound too pretentious, but, you know, I look at the Sistine Chapel and I think, did he run out of room, or did he say that was it?
Yeah.
My guess is he ran out of room. Because I just, you always, always toss it around in your head, and weeks later you wake up one night and think, ah, that's a great idea, maybe I should do that, you know. And you never finish. And with this production, it has been ever, ever evolving. You know, this is my fourth production, and none of them are the same. And as a team that I work with, we are always seeking to improve on it.
Well, we can't wait, because the buzz on this show is I haven't heard a buzz like this in a long, long time.
Well,
the material, you know, is strong.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even more stronger here. That's what I feel.
Okay, give us a little short reason why somebody should buy a ticket for the show.
Reason enough is, for me, that I've seen the people already in preview walking out of here in the bucket load with their hearts high and their heads in the air, having had a great evening out. It's a real journey, the show. It's a real kind of roller coaster. You see most of the show through the eyes of the central character, and it culminates in, you know, an Oscar-winning song that is so uplifting and so... warming to every individual that encounters it. I wouldn't hesitate to buy a ticket if I were.
Well, in this crazy time with everything going on in the world, we certainly need a night out of something to, you know, to escape a world to escape into, but one that leaves us uplifting at the end.
I quite agree.
Yeah. I can't wait. And folks, you got to make sure that you put Dirty Dancing on your list, because I'm anticipating this to be one of the treats of this year. And James, thank you, and keep up the good work, and my best to you. I think New York is going
to
be ready for the show.
Thank you
once
very
it
much.
Hits there.
Great to
hey,
talk
folks,
to you.
Thank you, and go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast for the week of October 20th, 2008. Caffeine Theater begins their fifth season with Many Loves, a rarely produced drama by William Carlos Williams. It's the story of the young director Humbert, who is torn between his leading lady and his older benefactor Peter. Yet Humbert is mostly in love with his play, and with his conviction that art can change the world. First performed by the Living Theater in 1959, Many Loves is reimagined here by director Joni Schultz. William Carlos Williams is often called the father of American poetry, and the Caffeine Theater is pleased to present Many Loves in honor of his 125th birthday. Also coming your way this season is Appletree's John and Jen, an original musical that takes a look at the complexities of relationships between brothers and sisters and parents and children. This music was written by Andrew Lippa with lyrics by Tom Greenwald. Score for piano, cello, and percussion, John and Jen is a musical about connections, commitments, and the healing of the human heart. For more information, you can go to www.appletreetheater.com or call their box office at 847-432-4335. That's John and Jen over at Highland Park's Appletree Theater. Turn of the century from acclaimed director Tommy Toon, from the writers of Jersey Boys, opened here recently at our very own Goodman Theater here in Chicago, to somewhat mixed reviews, but that hasn't stopped them from setting their sights on Broadway. We're hoping to get to New York next summer, Ellis said, and we want to try to take the piece to another theater before then. Apparently some major rewrites have taken place, and they have a big-time producer on board for when things open up there in Broadway. So come on down and check it out at the Goodman Theater, now running through November 2nd, starring Rachel York and Jeff Daniels. For more information or for tickets, you can call 312-443-3800. Steep Theater is opening a new space with their production of 7 Days. Formerly located at the corner of Sheffield and Sheridan Road, the company has built out a brand new theater space at 1115 West Berwyn in the Edgewater neighborhood. Their new space on Berwyn, right off the Red Line stop, will feature a 60 to 70 seat theater, 3 bathrooms, a larger lobby, more scene shop space, and a bigger dressing room and lighting booth. The ensemble-based company is planning to officially open their new digs to the public on October 30th, with the opening night of their production of 7 Days. Written by company member Egan Reich specifically for the Steep Ensemble, and directed by company member Jim Poole. 7 Days alludes to the biblical creation story and combines Old West mythology, romance, social commentary, and modern political themes. To purchase tickets, go to www.steeptheater.com or call them at 312-458-0722. There's been a change in the guards at Stage Left Theater. After 8 years, Stage Left Theater's artistic director Kevin Heckman is now the managing director for Evanston's Next Theater, where it has just been announced that Bostonian Jason Sutherland will succeed Jason Lowith as artistic director. Taking Heckman's place at Stage Left are interim co-artistic directors Drew Martin and David Allen Moore. Martin held the position for 8 years prior to Heckman, who still remains an active member of the Stage Left Ensemble. Today is October 20th, which means tonight are the Equity Jeff Awards, held at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, located at 9501 Skokie Boulevard. The pre-show appetizer buffet runs 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., and the award ceremony, directed this year by Michael Weber, begins promptly at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at the door for $85 and $65 for members of Actors Equity Association, United Scenic Artists, Society of Stage Directors and Choreographers, and the Dramatists Guild of America. The evening is black tie optional, and the public is invited. So that's just some of the news here at Talk Theater in Chicago for our weekly podcast. Tune in next week, and we'll have more of your Talk Theater in Chicago news.
Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would especially like to thank you, our listening audiences, for tuning in every week. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.